Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod once again. A really big weekend of Super Rugby coming up. We've copped some heat, actually, from a few fans calling us the Crusaders Rugby Pod. So we're going to try to, you know, show that we do have love for the Hurricanes, because obviously there's some Hurricanes fans out there who want a little bit more about their team within this show. And we'll try to do our very best for you on that. We've got a big piece of Stephen Pettifetta first five analysis. Chipper's getting flash on us this week as well. The Opiki final is going to be massive. The Blues sneak home into top spot. Matatu knock over the Manawa. Blues at home versus the Manawa in the final this weekend. So that's big. A little bit on how you can watch that final on TikTok as well. We'll have your email comments, your YouTube comments. Of course, the person who gets the best comment will get the player sport ball as well. So that to go in the tipping comp before we get any further. James Parsons.
How are?
Very well, very well. Excited about a weekend.
I'm just fascinated that I've been associated with being a Crusaders podcast fan. Bryn, you must be just pumping them up too much, mate. I've been spending so much time on Duplessis, Karifia, Safar Moore, mate. You've got to give those Canes a bit of love, mate.
Well, I don't know how much more love I can give them. I told them that they're the dark horse to win the competition.
That's true. That's true.
What more they want? I don't know what more they want from me.
Oh, yeah. It's difficult, though, isn't it? You can't please everyone. There's all these different
80-20
teams.
Rule.
Yeah, and the Crusaders, to be fair, I mean, if the All Blacks were suddenly 0-5, we'd be having the similar conversations week on week. We're talking about the greatest team in the history of Super Rugby, possibly the greatest provincial/club team to ever play the game. So I apologize if we focused on that.
That's going to get more heat. The Irish fans and South African fans.
Bring your arguments. Bring your arguments. I'm willing to have them. But the Hurricanes have been very good, and we'll look to do a little bit more on the Hurricanes today. So let's start there, actually, with the viewer question that inspired the intro and that conversation. Very big thank you to Kerry Gertson, who sent us an email. Perhaps you may consider a name change for the program to Crusaders Rugby Pod. Shouldn't you be focusing on them as what they are doing right now and what they're doing to everyone should be of interest? The same applies to the Chiefs and the Blues as well. So please do better. Well, you'll lose my interest. So, my question goes, let's start with you, Jipper.
Yeah.
What makes the Canes so good this year?
Well, I think we've touched on it in parts, and I'm not being facetious there. I genuinely do think we've touched on it. But they've been so good, you can't labour a point. You know, like they've been consistent. Their biggest change, I believe, is their type five. You know, their set piece, scrum and line out. We see any team that can't function there, you know, is their biggest change, I believe. On top of that, the breakdown is where the game is won and lost. That loose forward trio, how do you pick it every week? You know, like it is the best crop of loosies in terms of squad depth across the campaign, across New Zealand and Australia and Fiji. And then out the back of that, they have got, I suppose, an innate ability to put teams under pressure through the defensive line, and it forces a lot of errors and turnovers, and they're extremely good off those turnovers. So when they put that line speed pressure, and they're quite short on D, they do leave the outside a hell of a lot, and they're not worried about that. They back themselves to cover that, or if there's a kick, they've got time to get back there. But they just, like, Corey James been running it for a long time. He did it himself as a player. Their wingers are high, real high, and they just bring that pressure, and then it forces them to go back inside. Then they've got that forward pack I just mentioned, 1-8, to clean them up, and then they're brutal in that collision area and that breakdown, and teams can't get past, they can't get a roll on. The way attacks need to get a roll on is get in behind that defensive line. They just currently just can't do that, and I do think their defence is their biggest weapon. Their attack, they've always been good at. I don't think they've ever struggled attack-wise. You've got Geordie Barrett there. I think consistency of Brett Cameron, you know, when Aidan Morgan got his crack, he was great. So I liken the three areas for me is obviously their type five, their breakdown work with their loosies, in the defensive system.
The biggest thing that I've been impressed with has actually been Asafa Amua's leadership in and around decision making in big moments. Look, you know, sometimes you can take the 3 points and get an easy out, but I think in big games and derby games, you know, they've had that no nonsense approach in that forward pack, going to line out mauls, going to scrum, especially I remember in Christchurch against the Crusaders very early on, going for a scrum and then scoring points off that. So I think all those points that, you know, Gyps touched on, I completely agree with that. I think the challenge for them is they've obviously lost Cam Roygaard, who's been a big part of that in and around how wide they've played so well. Yes, TJ Petanella's back, and it's going to be great to see, I guess, the evolution of what that Hurricane side's going to look like. Is it going to look the same? Will it be a little bit off? I think it'll be pretty similar in the way they do play, and they'll continue to have that momentum. But I guess the challenge is for them is, you know, you want to be peaking towards the final. They have, you know, they started at a very high level. The challenge is for them to come to the final time. Can they do it? And the one thing that I think that they can do it is the depth that they do have. Mm. You look at that Rebels result, they had 14 changes, nothing changed, and you're going to have that competitiveness throughout the year. And when you come to the finals time, you're not going to be able to choose because your group is humming and competitive and wanting to be on the field. So, yeah, it's very, very good, good place to be in the Hurricanes headquarters at the moment.
You talk about that spine around decision making, but when you can have Almour on the field, a Karifi, a Brad Shields, a Geordie Barrett, you know, even your Billy Proctors, it's pretty professional. And now you add TJ Petanara in that mix as a leader. And let's not forget, when he did that injury, like, he was in the ABs and he was playing really well. And off the back of that Rebels performance, whew, it was, honestly, it was like 2016. All the old dogs were stepping up. Brad Shields was huge in that game. TJ, Geordie, it's, I think it's a really exciting time for them.
If you're going to have a person replacing Cam Roygaard, I mean, TJ Petanato for a decade has been that archetypical. Is that the right word? I don't know if that's the right word. It's a word.
It's a word.
The running halfback who can also play in other ways and is a great defender fits that system.
Fits it massively. And as Bryn said, like, all their players are bought into their system because it looked no different, 14 changes. And the one thing about TJ, man, he is just, I'd say it time and time again, I've never met a bloke that is more competitive. Maybe him and Rico Ioane are probably on even pecking order. Like, everything is, like, to the bus. How fast you can put rubbish away. I don't know. Anything they are going to compete on, and they go a hundy at it. So, I think he's motivated.
Yeah.
Like, when he gets that bit between his teeth and he's motivated, he wants to, you know, a lot of people have written him off, he'll be mindful of that and he'll want to make a statement.
Are they winning those games cleaning up and stuff, though? I mean, they're competitive, but are they winning the game?
It's a very even split, and they're both very loud. Well, when I was around them, they're both very loud that you knew who won, put it that way.
Yeah.
You very
and
much...
if they lost?
they were pretty much straight back up wanting to...
To do it again.
Challenge something else.
We'll keep on playing until I win.
Yeah, pretty much.
You must have had a few games like that. The Crusaders, a few guys who are ultra competitive.
Oh, 100%. Look, I think just hearing the stories with TJ, he's one of the better competitors, I think, in not just New Zealand rugby, but world rugby with everything, and I guess his mindset when it comes to everything in life. So definitely saw that firsthand on the field. But I think he was pretty competitive. Then that guy sitting next to you on the left there was pretty good in that space. I think he would have, you know, I don't think it was not all the time, but when he was on, you didn't really want to get in a bad way when it came to Big Jiffer. So he's right up there, the big fella on the left.
I've simmered down in retirement.
Yeah.
And having a daughter. What do you call it? Sand the rough edges off?
Yeah, that's right. A few less golf clubs wrapped around the bag.
Yeah. I've just given up golf.
that is not a sport that is going to calm you down.
No.
There's no way. No way at all. Okay, so I've got another question in relation to the Hurricanes, because we've been bombarded and, you know, we've got to give you what you want. Michael Williams via email. Based on previous history, we often find that the informed Super Rugby team tends to have more players picked for the ABs. Who do you think gets picked for the ABs from the Hurricanes based on current form? What do you think, Bryn?
Guys like Ruben Love, he's an easy pick, I think, with the form that he's had. You've obviously got that Moose 4 trio. Not too sure what Razor's mix and what he's wanting, but you know, there's probably three or four guys there that you have to be think would be in the conversation to be in that loose forward trio. I think within their tight five, look, you've got Namea, who's played really well. You've got Asafa Moore, who we think is probably going to be in that mix. You could probably go, Isaiah Walker-Leawedi. he's in that conversation with how he's played in the first, you know, part of the competition. And so, and then you've got the incumbents of like a Geordie Barrett and that. So, yeah, there's a lot that could make the team. I can't really probably pinpoint right now who I think is going to be, you know, in the mix when it comes to the team naming. But, you know, those guys that I've named and, you know, probably Jib will come over the top with who else he thinks. But there's a lot of them putting their hands up for higher honours this year.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a dark horse for me. I think there's the natural ones you'll lean towards. I think the hard one, before I get onto my dark horse, is Karifi, Lakai, Harmon. You know, like there's quite a battle going on. Christie, he was in the All Blacks 15 as well. You sort of know Dalton's going to be there. You know, even to a point, Callum Boshier's in the mix. I do find that's quite a hard selection, that squad member seven. So do they go for an out-and-out seven? Does Ethan Blackadder come back into the mix that he can cover seven and so forth? So that's an interesting one, but I think both Lakai and Karifi are definitely in the conversation for a spot. And then I really like the work of Caleb Delaney in the second row at lock. Mm. Liking him a little bit to like a Tom Franklin, you know, like he gets through his core roles really well. He's a really strong carrier. He's busy, constantly topping the stats for them in the middle, in the tough carries, tough tackles, and he's got a bit of flair about him. So, you know, he's one to watch, I think, in that second row. And he may look a little bit smaller, but, man, he gets through his work with physical ease by the looks. And I know international's a step up, but... yeah, he's impressed me.
Well, when you look at the locking stocks around the place, at how many are probably shoo-ins and how many will remain in the squad, what chances do you see him legitimately of getting a spot there?
Yeah. When you think of Lord, Tupouvahi, Barrett, Tuipulotu, it's going to be challenging because they've already invested in those guys in the black jersey. But, man, form can't be ignored. And I think it's a new coaching group, a new four-year cycle. You know, age may come into it, and he's a young man, and an opportunity may be given. Or, you know, Walker Leawiri has been in the All Blacks 15, so he's an option, Cam Suifua. But I really like the way Delaney's going about his work, and he definitely warrants All Black 15 selection for me.
And it's probably been a question that's been answered a lot in probably the past around their tight five, and when it gets tough. For example, when you go down to Christchurch in a quarter final when it's wet, you know, doing the hard stuff like Caleb Delaney and doing all the grunt work, you know, they're doing that. So the challenge is, you know, you're picking up wins and hopefully they can get a home final or a home semi-final against a team, you know, like a Blues or a Chiefs or, you know, whoever it may be, a Brumbies or whatever. It's probably that's probably a little bit of an Achilles heel the last 2 years. They've had to go to Canberra and they haven't had that ability to be at home. So they'll be a different team at home. It's just been able to continue the success they've had and continue to keep chipping away and see what happens when it comes to the back end of the year.
Sure as hell don't want to go to Canberra the way the Brumbies are playing right now. But when you look at that table, the Blues on 27, admittedly game in hand, the Hurricanes unbeaten on 27, Brumbies on 27, the Chiefs back on 23. And you consider the Hurricanes are hosting the Chiefs this weekend. The Chiefs obviously put a huge score on Moana Pacifica. Do the Chiefs have what it takes to end this run from the Canes?
Oh, I think you'd be silly to think they don't with the calibre of player they have and the way they can sort of light a game up. Their biggest challenge is coming in and out of games. Like, they can score 28 points within 10, 15 minutes and then they drop off and let a team sort of creep back in. Mm. They obviously didn't against Moana Pacifica, but you sort of saw that against the Highlanders. They wouldn't want that performance, I don't believe. And then obviously after the Crusaders game, you know, maybe question marks sort of come. But I think there was that stat, not to say that, you know, I thought Josh Aiken was great and the Crusader game you can put to the side, but I think there's some ridiculous stat that Damian McKenzie, when he's on the field, they're like 170 points for and, you know, 50 or 60 against, and then when he's not there, it's like 10 points for and 50 or 60 against or whatever. So he is a key cog, and if he's there, it's a game changer. It's sort of like when the Blues went down there. You know, you sort of didn't know who was going to win. Most people leant to the Blues. I think on this occasion, everyone will be leaning more to the Hurricanes, but I don't know. Chiefs mana, backs against the wall, no one expecting them to win. We've seen them do it in Christchurch time and time again, go down there, no one gives them the chance. So, and Clayton sort of said there's been a few questions had to be said inside after that Crusaders game, and they definitely answered against Moana Pacifica, didn't they?
Now, we have got an interesting question through from Fossilmatic on YouTube. He says, wow, if the Crusaders pattern is really what Razor is going to run and the All Blacks around the spine, it raises the questions. Firstly, which player best matches Maunga's profile? To get a little bit into that, we've got James Parsons at the big wall.
I've always wanted to be here. I've just tried to manipulate myself in here, so thank you very much for your question. But if we look here, there's a lot of moving parts to this, but we will sort of single out Stephen Perifetta. If you look there, the first forward pod is set, which engages the defence. More importantly, the second forward pod is set with a player out the back and a threat on the inside. So it's constantly having to make the defence make a decision. The key is what made Moonga so successful. He always chose where the space was. If we play it on now, on this occasion, Stephen goes through, everyone's engaged, engaging those defenders, it creates that space. Now his growth, where Richie was so good, is finishing that off. He was amazing. Once Moonga broke like that, he would get through in the try. We saw another a couple of times in this game when the ball comes out the back, Stephen is just getting better and better, is picking the opportunity and where the space is to create tries and or sort of big, deep involvements in the back of defences, and then they can't recover from there. So I definitely think he fits that profile. And the one thing that I think is more important, though, is that he has the ball out the back like this. And those bodies, if you see that Taylor line just there, that created the disconnect. So those bodies in motion for Stephen from the Blues will give him the best opportunity to be selected for the All Blacks.
Bryn, do you feel like that is on the money as far as how Perifetta might fit into Razor's preferred attacking plans?
Yeah, firstly, Jim, well done, mate. Look, that was like NRL Fox kind of set up, Matty Johnson. So, mate, very well done. And thanks for the question, obviously, with a bit of visual with that as well. So, no, I definitely do agree. I think, you know, the way that the Blues do play with Stephen Perifetta, with the image that you did see, when you've got guys that are running nice and square and you've got the animation outside it, really, Stevie just has to pick the option, which we saw in those two clips. He was able to go out the back, that fourth, fifth defender, go through, or even possibly going same way, a double pump, and then being able to hit the right option. So, yeah, I think Stevie's doing a really good job with the Blues. I also think Damien McKenzie is doing that very, very well for the Chiefs. They have a little bit more of a different attacking shape outside that. But, look, I think both those two guys, with that kind of DNA of what Richie does out the back, we're definitely seeing some good growth in the areas from those two first lines, I believe.
Bryn, do you think they will remain with that shape?
I think they will have a similar style. I think, you know, like you said, Jip, a couple of weeks ago, you know, Razor's had success with this DNA, and I don't see them changing a lot with what's made them successful. So I think there might be a little bit of variation outside the pod. So, you know, if there's Damien McKenzie or Stephen Perifetta getting the ball out the back, there might be a bit of variation in around that face play shape on the outside of that. So, but I think it'll be very similar to what the Blues shape is, because Leon McDonald obviously did a lot of attack at Blues. And, you know, I think Damien McKenzie, with the way that he's playing, he can fit in really nicely with whatever that shape is. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it'll be very, very similar how they run it in the All Blacks this year.
It's definitely right up Damien's alley. I've just been asked a lot why I think Stevie is a real candidate to back up Damien. Mm. I think Damien's got the inside running. Look at the way he's playing. But I think his game is just growing and growing. And that ability to pick the right person, Bryn, or run, is a lot harder than it looks. And he's done it NPC level, but he's starting to do it Blues. And if Leon is running the attack, he is big on his forwards getting set early and being active right at the line. Like, you have to engage defenders so that the opportunity is presented for the first receiver out the back to pick the right option. So, yeah. No doubt. There'll be some innovation, no doubt, but it will. Rugby's been the same for a wee while. So if you're engaged, you're bring those defenders in, there will be space somewhere.
Don't underestimate the people in and around it. Like, yeah, yes, you know, a Stephen Perifetta or Damien McKenzie or Richie Moonga would go through, and yes, they see the space. They've done the prep throughout the week, and through longevity of seeing those pitches, they'll be able to do it. But the guys that are running outside the lines, the square carry with the tip line, you look at that clip with Jipper, two guys were on the same guy. You know what I mean? So for it all to flow, they've all got to be in synergy and all be on the right page. So you're not going to get it all the time, but, you know, if you drive that high standard of being set early, it gives you the best chance to be able to see where the space is, and then you can go to the hole, and you can also communicate. The second pivot and the two forwards on the outside, which we saw, is really important around giving the comms for that team to have the confidence to say, I've got options, or I can see what's in front of me, and I can go for the line break, which we saw with that clip.
So Pettifed has obviously been a really key part in the Blues' success so far. You know, they are sitting on top of the table, even if it is just because they've played an extra game. The points are there. Mm. The points are there, and, you know, if the Chiefs were to beat the Hurricanes, suddenly, you know, things look a little bit different. Are the Blues rightfully on that top spot? Are they a team that should be considered that partway through the year?
Oh, I think the Hurricanes are top. Like, it's ridiculous to try and say they're not after a bye, but they're definitely one, two, maybe three. And in the top three, definitely. And the reason for me, similar to the Hurricanes, is the defence. Like, they defended at 94% on the weekend. They've only let in one try the last 3 weeks. And all the statistical metrics, like, and the Hurricanes' stats are a little bit deceiving. They only paint the picture because they shorten up. They do miss quite a few tackles, but they have that recovery, so their statistics aren't as high. But Craig McGrath is the defensive coach at the Blues, and I think he's got, you know, he's had these guys for 2 or 3 years. They really understand the system. They've got a good sort of foundation. Vern seems to have brought a sort of a tradesman-like edge to them on all aspects of the game, really. But I think that helps in D the most. Like, they keep turning up for each other. Even when they get broken, they do scramble well. So I do think that defence, well, based on stats, but also based on the fact that they've had the least tries scored against them, that is the most impressive part of their game for me. We know they can attack, we know they get energetic, bodies in motion on attack. The big part of their game that probably has been challenged is probably line out at times, but they're still running at 90%, and their scrum is pretty dominant. Like, they've been pretty formidable there, and their loose forward trio is similar to the Canes, quite hard to pick, which means it gives you that benefit of the breakdown.
It's a word on your old mate Offa Tungafasi. I mean, he is, it appears to be heading into the prime of his career. He's playing really, really well. He's been around forever.
Yeah. But still a young man as well in terms of propping states and playing at loose head on the weekend. Like, I still think he's a genuine out-and-out tight head, but he's really made that loose head position. You know, they sort of moulded him into that Ben Franks role with the All Blacks and being able to cover both sides. And, man, he destroyed the force on the weekend. It was quite tough to watch if you were a Force fan.
Yeah. Well, what's impressing you the most about the Blues, Bryn?
Look, you know, Akira Ioane and Hoskins Satutu on the weekend, look, the Grafman work that they did, yes, they can attack. There was abilities where they were on the edge and they were putting people into space. But you look at the work that they're doing continuously, you know, through games, you know, and I think that stern edge that Vern's kind of brought in, you can see it in the way the Blues are playing. And look, I think as well, the entries when they got into the 22, you know, they were efficient on the weekend. I could be wrong here, Jip, but, you know,
eight out of eight.
6 out of 6 entries.
8 out of 8.
Yeah, 8 out of 8. You know, 100% when it comes into that zone. So in the finals times, if you can have that kind of percentage, which they probably won't against a better team, but anywhere in and around a high percentage like they were on the weekend, they're a tough team to ask. They're a tough team to beat. So, yeah, it's really good for the Blues, and I guess they've got a very similar to what the Chiefs and the Hurricanes are going through. You know, getting your points, picking them up. Hopefully at the back end of the year, all these things that they're evolving, because I think they have been evolving. You know, they weren't, you know, they haven't been probably the strongest team that we've talked around with the Hurricanes and the Chiefs, but they're chipping away, getting at very good areas where they need to in some parts of the game. And on the weekend, you know, that breakdown work is, and the big boys going to work around the set piece, it was really good against the Force, who I thought were actually shocking on the weekend. They were horrific. Their game plan, I don't know what they were doing in their game plan. They kicked away everything. There must have been a game plan around, like, to try attack to the 50. But, yeah, look, it was a pretty tough watch, I thought, considering their game plan that they kind of brought into Eden Park.
The irony is the kick stats were 30 to 29. The Blues actually kicked more. But it's when you don't... We always talk about kick strategy on here, and that was aimless. Like, that was just kicking to just not play in their end. They were too nervous of being turned over or whatever, maybe weather conditions. But you wouldn't have felt the Blues kicked as much as they did, because they would be attacking kicks, or they'd be to put them into field position, and they'd be the right kicks based on what the defence was showing them. So again, going back to picking that space, knowing where that is. I think the other interesting point about the Blues is, as we talked about the Hurricane squad depth, but and for years, and you know, maybe that's why I've been associated with the Crusaders rugby pod, because I've got so many demons of them doing things so well for so long. They always had a next man up. If you use Cole Forbes, Corey Evans, you know, Patrick's been coming and going in that locking stakes. They haven't had a settled side, and that their performance hasn't changed. You know, if anything, Cole Forbes is shining. Corey Evans shone massively against the Force. AJ Lamb comes in, Mark Talia's out. You know, like, there is a lot of chopping and changing. And the fact that they can keep those standards high, again, is a good sign for them. And they're very low in their penalties. Mm. They're not giving teams many opportunities for entries into that 22, which is a big, big part.
Are you going to give Bryn free entry into the Hoskins Tutu Akita Ioane fan club? As the president?
I'll tell you what, they're worthy men to be nominated from Brenner, and I'm really happy for him to take the reins of some blue support, because, you know, I've been jumping on this Crusaders bandwagon lately, you know, trying to lift them. I know where they've been. You know, it'd be good to see him pump up a few hard workers.
Well, I mean, I like what you guys are saying about Vern Cotter and those two people in particular, because I think the rap on those two people has always been that they're about the flash stuff, but not the hard stuff. Brinstein, they're doing all the work now. So when you combine those two things, you know, logic would say that the world is their oyster when they combine those two things for those guys.
And the best way to explain that work is probably the Blues counter-attack, Bryn. And look, I'm not name-dropping coaches, but Dan Helangahu does need to have a pat on the back from the attack instruction, the work he's doing around this counter-attack. They had 37% territory on the weekend. So most of their tries are coming from deep.
Yeah.
Same in that clip I showed Stevie, it's come from deep. They work hard back to have more bodies in the backfield so they can manipulate. Yes, they've got some freaks. But even when they don't make that bend, they have that setup that we showed of Stevie, and they can still break you. So it's that constant work off the ball to put themselves in position, maybe check a defender that creates a space for Caleb Clark to roll through. So they're never off. They're always on. And Akira and Hoskins have been massive in that area. Everyone sees the carries, everyone sees the tackles, but if you actually go to the game or there's a wide angle, look at the work they're doing off the ball to get into position. So often Hoskins is playing that link play on counter-attacks that lead to tries. I think Marshy actually did a piece on it before the game really well around Hoskins too and his work off the ball.
Now, I've got another question for you about the Blues before we move on from the Blues. We've had a viewer question come in from Nick Troon. In fact, we're going to give you the Player Sport Rugby Ball this week, Nick, for this question, because your two boys play footy and, you know, let's give them a ball.
I thought we were going to give it to the Hurricanes.
Nothing to do with this. No, we're not going to. No, you know, he's got the first half of the show. Does he need the ball?
Yeah, yeah, that's
well?
True. That's
I,
true.
I don't know. I don't know. The Hurricanes rugby pod will move on and talk a little bit about this. Now, Nick Troon, who coaches kids in under 17, under 10s, he's asked a question for us. After watching Super Rugby this season, I'm finding it very difficult to convince myself that I want the kids to mimic the clean of their heroes. Often they don't stay on their feet or support their own body weight. The first two or three cleaners go straight over the top and seal off any chance of the opposition even challenging the ruck. How is this legal? I'm going to pick on the Blues, as they seem to be the worst at leaving their feet. Jip, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a two-way thing. Like, there's elements of the defence and the tackler rolling away. And I think we're seeing more and more penalties as tacklers are trying to roll north to south. We know they're supposed to go east or west. And what that has done is you can't get that low. Like, you actually... Mm. But you actually train, and we did the same thing, as you sort of put a... let's use this as an example. Put that as like a tackle bag,
yeah.
And you come in from the side, and you literally train hitting your shoulder and drive. You may look like you're on a flat plane, but if you keep your feet driving, you end up sort of back up on your feet.
Yeah.
So visually, it looks where I think a lot of players are going wrong when they try to do that. They're skidding.
Yeah.
And or they're so nervous. So I'm saying I agree. Like, I'm not on the Blues specifically, but I think in the comp as the whole, is these bodies have been first few weeks been flopping back into that halfback channel, and Bryn would hate that. And forwards are tasked with the task. You've got to get rid of that body, and so now people are over rushing, and the body's not there. So and I was surprised. There was a couple of games on the weekend. I was like, man, that is ceiling. I'm surprised refs are letting that go. But I also like that they let it go because no one was there. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I always hate, like, this is where our game's getting better. A little bit of common sense. Yes, in the rule book, they're off their feet, but let's keep the game moving. Like, I do think the refs needs a bit of credit. If there's no one there and they've sealed it, then it's play on. But if there's someone there and they sealed it, then they will get penalised. And I think the refs have got that balance really nice. But I agree, it is a little bit messy. But I think it's messy because of the pressure the defence is putting on. And now defence is changing that picture and people are just sort of over-rushing into that breakdown space. But as a forward, you've got to understand the pressure they're under. If they miss their clean, it's like you won't play. So there is a genuine desperation to get there and move a body and or seal that ball.
So if you're Nick and you're trying to coach kids how to approach a clean and these kids are watching the clean on television, what would your advice be to a person like Nick who's taking young kids through that?
I always think of it... We also did this drill that helped me. I don't know if this is right, and nor should I be giving out coaching advice live on television. But you have if you have a tackler and a guy with a pad on the inside, a guy with a pad on the inside outside, and then you have a ball carrier and a cleaner, and they're clear that if they're going to do a tip or he's going to carry or it's an inside ball. But it's then once they've made that decision, winning that race into the space, not necessarily going off your feet, but you're winning the race against the bags.
Yeah.
So the bags are always going to dive into that ruck. It's a 3v3 drill. So it's literally like, okay, what are we going to do? And then if we are tip, who's going to get the outside guy? And you can train scenarios, and all it is about is winning the race. You've just got to win the race. Like, get in that space. Mm. Where we've got in trouble and why he's seen it is the person that's tackling him is rolling on their ball.
Yeah.
And players have got to the point where it maybe hasn't been penalised that much and they've taken it into their own hands. So it would be an opportunity. It trains both sides. The tackler can roll out east to west, trains guys to get in to have a hunt, and it trains the guys with the ball to be really clear on what carry they're going to do and how fast they can get in there and win that race. Mm-hmm. Did I do that well, Bryn?
I was just about to say, mate, I didn't do a lot of cleaning out of my time, Jip, so obviously you've asked the right question, I asked the right man.
But if we didn't, I think it's... if we didn't clean out, you had a problem.
Oh, mate, well, geez. I think, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I asked halfbacks when we were referring to, like, giving the ball out to Richie. If, you know, if your forwards are a second late and you've got a jackler like Dalton Papali'i or Karifi or co on the ball, it just slows down all your momentum. So winning the race is always a big message in and around our forward pack. You've got to win the race to do it. You're not always going to get it right. I think probably that's the scenes that you do see when guys are just flying in to be able to try and win the ball, because in all honesty, you need to get that ball out. You need to do whatever you can within the rules to get that ball out. It's not just the Blues. Look, the Chiefs do a really good job at it as well. I think, Ross, you brought up a point around, I think one of the emails was that, you know, sometimes they take them off the ball. They tackle them onto the ground, maybe a metre or 2 metres past the ball. And sometimes that's not penalised, but the balance of what the refs are doing, and I think officiating it are really good. Because sometimes I think another example is that where I think the refs refereeing it really well was when it's a fake hunt. You get guys that are going for a fake jackal and people are flying off their feet, but because they've pulled themselves out, you can hear the refs communicate, "No, you've pulled yourself out. That's not a penalty." Where sometimes if you're just watching rugby for the first time, you're thinking, "That guy's flying off his feet. Why is that not a penalty?" So I think the refs, I agree with Jip, are doing a good job around that. So, and I think it's just on the players really to roll away or like win the race is probably the most important thing when it comes to the breakdown.
I think like if we go... Jeez, I'm loving to get off my seat.
Well, and get the legs
but,
out as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But say, like, that's the ball there, and this is the tackler there, and your ball carrier's here, and we say, let's just go through three scenarios. Because I'm just thinking, this guy's going to go and coach this, and I don't want it to be average. So my OCD's coming out of me. And this guy beats into the space. If you're within the metre, they can clean that person. Yeah. You don't necessarily need to be off your feet. So if you're thinking win the race and he beats you there, then you move him. If you win the race and he doesn't beat you there, he's probably not going to hunt. So then you've got the option to stay on your feet like that, or as you've seen, people pick through the middle. So there's easy ways for them to train sort of different options and making better decisions around that breakdown for young kids that I think if you can learn to sort of take out... Sorry, player sports, but you've had enough action for today. If you can learn to make better decisions around that breakdown, you're going to see these pitches earlier, which will make you win the race because you'll instinctively get into those spaces.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you. That's how it's
player
done.
Sports.
That's how it's done.
I'll tell you what, mate, you have been on fire today.
Yeah, I'm thriving, not surviving today, Bryn. That's what happens when the Blues put on a performance like that. I just got a spring in my step.
They sit top of the table, high in the seat.
Yeah.
it's all looking very good. So thank you very much to Nick Troon for your question. We'll get the player sport ball out to you as soon as we can. And anyone, if you want to send us a question, email us at aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz and we'll try our best to get it into the show wherever possible. Maybe include where you're emailing from as well, so we've got an idea of where you're from. Of course, you can do it in the YouTube comment section as well. So thank you very much to everyone who sent those through. I want to move on now to the Brumbies. The reason I want to move on to the Brumbies, guys, is that at the start of the year, they didn't look like much. And right now, they look $1 million. And as you mentioned earlier, the last thing you'd want to do is to head to Canberra come playoff time.
They haven't sold me.
They haven't sold you?
No, and I know that's going to be a little bit of a rattle the cage, but they defended at 78%. You're not going to win this competition at 78% defence. 27 missed tackles. Yes, the Waratahs couldn't take advantage of it. Totally understand that. And they're, as I sort of mentioned with the Hurricanes, is, you know, like, their scramble D's good. And the Brumbies' scramble D is good, but the Hurricanes are sort of at 86%. You know, like, 78? Like, they've spent a lot of time. Like, if we go Moana Pacifica, 77%. So it shows the difference of scramble. Like, Moana Pacifica couldn't scramble and cut off the points. But that's not going to work against the Hurricanes. That is just not going to work. Yeah. Like, defence, I believe, and I think it's been like it for years, defence will win championships. If they don't sort that out, you can't win this comp, whether you're at home or not. 78% is not good enough.
They've got a few weeks to get that done.
But they've averaged like 81, like through the they've only had one or two games in the 80s. Like they against the Rebels, I think they were 74%. You know, like, these are really, like, this is the Brumbies. Like, we compare them to the Crusaders. Like, they have been the figurehead of this competition. That is not a standard George Smith would take, I can assure you.
Yeah.
He would make it personal. David Pocock, Stephen Moore. There's no way mate, review with them with 78%.
Yeah.
Struth.
Well, Stephen Larkham's on that list of people of great Brumbies.
Well, he's a good attacker.
Was he a defender? I don't know. George Gregan, obviously.
Oh, I'm just saying, like, the way they won that game against the Tars was pretty amazing for how poorly they defended. One-on-one tackles.
Yeah.
Their system's not a problem. One-on-one tackles. So if they shore that up to high 80s, they're a chance.
But as it stands, they get to the semis. You know,
mate, against the Canes, 77%, 78%. It's just, you will not, if it's not Yulsey, it's Love. If it's not Love, it's Proctor. If it's not him, it's Barrett, Shields, TJ. Like, this, if there's space there, those athletes will clean them up.
Bryn?
Their draw's been pretty easy. Like, they have actually played a lot of teams that have been on the bottom half of the competition. So, yes, they are picking up wins, and so they should. You know, we think the Brumbies are probably the best team in Australia, given their successful team throughout a long period of time. But they have had the easier side of the draw. And I think in the back end, when they start playing the New Zealand teams, especially the Crusaders, who else they're playing, they've got to play the Chiefs again, the Blues, I think. So they've got a bit of a litmus test coming up pretty shortly. So, yeah, I think their defence, like, they can attack, but you've got Tool, obviously, they're at their back three. They can go to their set piece as well when it goes to their maul, which probably hasn't been operating like which we're accustomed to seeing, but they still have that DNA on the attacking side, which Stephen Larkham is good at. It's that defensive side that, if you're going to operate in the 70s against the New Zealand teams with the firepower that we've seen with the Chiefs and co and the Hurricanes, yeah, good luck to the Brumbies if they're going to start defending at that kind of percentage.
I'm just reading my notes I wrote during the game. Is it amazing scramble or poor attack? The Tars only had 44% possession and they had 16 turnovers. Gee whiskers, that's a lot of turnovers for so little time on attack.
Yeah, yeah.
I sound so brutal on
it. It is brutal. I'm enjoying it. Enjoying the brutal honesty. They are currently third on the table. And
mate, they're doing
in
well.
A position to make a big play if they can do well through that back half.
And I think all they've got to do is shore up that D.
Yeah.
If that can be more consistent.
The other Aussie team that's looking looking really good is the Rebels, who beat the Drua. But again, they've also got a back half of the comp that you would not want to go into, where they've got all of the top Kiwi sides on the way home, basically. It's pretty tough.
For the squad they've got, they're doing so well. The pressure they're under. And the lightning hot start the Drua had. Yes, the red card, you can... you can say that's one thing, but I wrote down how many penalties the Drua had. 16 penalties. Take the red card out. Like, 16 penalties. That is just like, you see, it went up to Mick Byrne, and he was just like, he just looked gutted and deflated, eh? Like, I was just like, oh, poor bugger. I've got a soft spot for Mick, but, and it ruined my picks. But yeah, they did well to come. They did well to come back from that start. The Drua were pretty dominant physically, and they actually, the Drua had 61%, which is the highest I've seen in the male game for a long time of game line percentage. And the Rebels going into that week had the better dominant stats of the comp. They were number one in terms of those physicality stats. So two big sides going together. And the Drua still won that battle, but their discipline was killed.
Bryn, as the chief of the Rebels fan club, what's your thought?
Oh, look, no, they, man, that I guess that second half, you know, you look at the yellow card really to kind of start the snowball effect for the Fijian Drua, unfortunately. You know, they scored, you know, three tries, 21 points of that yellow card. But to their credit, they've done it a few times this year where they've, you know, they've let out a bit of a head start with the other teams, but through the resilience and, I guess, you know, I guess the care that they have in that team, maybe playing for a bigger purpose than themselves or, you know, what's ahead, they're finding ways to get back in the game. Because look, whenever you have gain line percentage and, you know, they're at the top end of the competition around that, you're going to be able to get the likes of Carter Gordon and obviously Vaihu, who I thought was great on the weekend with his attacking ability that he showed. And, you know, I think the physicality around it, if you can do it more consistently, and yes, it was a bit of an easy run because the Fijian Drua discipline was... It was pretty horrific. It was really tough to watch for them, knowing what was on the line, and we backed them and saying that, you know, they're going to turn the corner. And after the first half, before it all happened, they were doing it. They were 20 points to 8 up, and I thought, this is nice. They're having a bit of continuity. They're getting points where they need to, and then just some brain explosions. Unfortunately, that's all you can really call it. And to the credit of the Rebels, they went over the top, and knowing that they probably should have, knowing that you're playing with 13 men for the majority of that second half. But yeah, fair play to the Rebels. And hopefully, there's been obviously a bit of investment in them. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ross.
There's some bidders who are, a consortium, I think is probably the right word, who are looking to move them to Western Sydney, where there's a larger Pacifica community, more attached to rugby than maybe the central part. You know, there's obviously those rumours as well. Western Melbourne, sorry, you're right, Western Melbourne. And then there's also all of that chat about whether Moana Pacifica and them could merge. I don't know how those things correlate, but there's a lot of chat about them. But it sounds like with $30 million to come on the table, the debts could be gone and they could have a bit of a future in a place that might make a little bit more sense.
Well, and you keep putting out performances and winning games, it makes it more interesting for people to buy and invest into. I don't think, like, I think Moana Pacifica's standalone. I don't see that merger happening. So it's either this or probably bust.
They do struggle to fill a stadium. I suppose similar to a lot of Super Rugby teams, struggle to fill a stadium. And if they head out west to a stadium that looks like it's going to be developed, the home ground where the training facilities are is pretty small at the moment. It sounds like you get 5,000 people in a temporary stand, but with the long-term view to build a 15,000-seat stadium out in that part of Western Melbourne, it could be an option
My good mate lives in Melbourne. Melbourne's so big. Like, maybe actually moving it away from that stadium, Amy Park, because a lot of the barriers is getting in there. Like, their public transport's amazing and stuff, but it's a long time. Like, I think when I caught the train to his house, it was like an hour 10. So that's like going to the Tronin. You know, like, that's a heavy-duty haul. And if you've got young kids and stuff at that time of night, like, it is a bit of a barrier. So maybe this brings it closer to the rugby community.
Yeah, and when a community can own a team, it makes a big difference, right? When it's not so much owned by the entire city or by some sort of business, it's owned by the people, then, you know, there's a bit of a chance there. So, well, hopefully that's good for the Rebels and for Australian rugby in the future. Let's move on, though, to Super Rugby Opiki. We have the final this weekend, the big final of Super Rugby Opiki. The Blues are going to be hosting the Manua after Matatu came through with a big win on the weekend. That late try, Liv McGovern coming through the gap and changing everything and giving the Blues the chance to qualify top. Bryn, Matatu did it. They did what you needed them to do. They came through for you. And it leaves the Blues maybe as the team to beat.
Yeah, I could probably speak a little bit wrong here, but I thought the Chiefs played it quite tight. in the last 20 minutes. Look, I thought, you know, the impact of what the Mata 2 bench coming on, look, I thought, you know, Maya Joseph was great in and around a few attacking kicks that they did. And I think, you know, also their dominance around their forward pack. I thought both teams actually physicality-wise, it was a really great game to watch. You know, one team had their moments, one team had their moments, and it was a really great, great game when it came to the contact area. But I just think in that last 20 minutes, you know, the turnovers, that I guess the pressure that Mata 2 were putting on the Chiefs, they weren't able to hold on to the ball. Mistakes, ill-discipline, and those kind of things, they weren't able to get out of that kind of that snowball effect of what they were in. So I think they will review hard, knowing that they do have a final. But look, the Blues team, oof, geez, that eight that they have, look, man, they've got a very, very impressive ball pack. So you look at the collision area that happened in the area with Mata 2, I think it's going to go up another level with the ball carriers and the way that they attack their breakdown defensively as well with their forward pack. You know, well, who was it? You've got Ngano, Itinu, Waipolo, Makari Tu'u, Ruse, Velikot, you know, all of those girls, man. It's like a brigade that's just coming at you for 80 minutes. So yeah, it's going to be a great game. And you know, obviously, Jip's going to be going for the Blues. So it'll be a very, very good watch.
The key thing for the Blues is I feel the script's flipped a little bit in terms of expectation. So it's always been on the manawa. You know, constantly, like, they're expected to win. I think Blues getting in the home, that weight of expectation and how they deal with that. They've got the game, they've shown it. They went to Hamilton, they were disciplined. They had 13 turnovers versus 26. They cut the offloads, they went direct, threw them, they challenged them at line-out time, which, again, proved a big area of concern for the Chiefs on the weekend. So they just need to stick to that. They need to trust that it's worked and just keep being consistent in that. Their discipline was very good that day as well. They brought that line speed pressure. Sylvia Brunt got that nice little intercept. So they've been becoming more confident of leaving the outside defensively. Where the Chiefs will be dangerous, I believe, if they sort their line out. Their discipline, they gave easy outs to the Mata 2 to just have the ball back. And I suppose under pressure they tried to play a little bit too much. And those turnovers, like 16 turnovers, just from a statistical point of view, for the standards they've set previously, you know, they're in double figures for penalties. They're averaging like five. You know, there's a big difference in that, and the turnovers as well are a lot higher. I suppose the only concern I had was they actually had to win by a bonus point, the Chiefs, so they had to score three tries more than the Mata 2. So even if they won, the Blues were going to host it. And they took a penalty shot in the second half.
Yeah.
They weren't tries up, and it didn't matter if they lost. Because if they lost or they didn't score the bonus point, you know, like, I just found it strange. And then from that on, then there was a turnover, and then Mata 2 went down and scored. They'd lost confidence in their lineout and their set piece,
which has been their strength for 2 years.
It's been their weapon.
Yeah.
And I think it's what they've got to come up with this week is, yes, Connors wasn't there. Hopefully Bremner's there. Chelsea Bremner's there, because it seems to be she's the one that is obviously running everything, and it just did not execute 2 weeks in a row. And I know what it's like when you get the ips at line-out time. There's nothing worse. It's like golf. Like, the harder you try, the worse it gets. So somehow just sort of, as Bryn always says, simplify the menu. Mm. And I really liked how the Blues walked in and went line-out time. You know, a couple of times they just walked in, beautiful throw. That's maybe something that, you know, remember when the Chiefs' men were struggling and Brodie Retallick used to sprint to the five and they'd just get up and go, or they'd throw it to Brad Weber, and, you know, like, maybe just be a bit innovative so they can get some confidence back in their lineout.
And then get going. Well, it was an absolute cracker of a final last year when Mata 2 got up over the Manawa. Going to have a slightly different coverage for you this year. A really good chance. So, 2Degrees are proud sponsors of Sky Super Rugby Opiki teams. But thanks to 2Degrees, it's a world first. The Sky Super Rugby Opiki final against the Blues and the Mana will be streamed vertically on TikTok. It's a little bit different. This Saturday, April 13. The campaign is fighting for fair by giving women's rugby the national coverage and broadcast exposure it deserves. So jump into the 2Degrees TikTok and check out that for more action. Plus, see the big final this Saturday, of course, on Sky Sport New Zealand TikTok or on the big screen if you're watching on Sky. But thank you to 2Degrees for doing that. It's a really cool, different way of doing it. Really looking forward to seeing what a rugby game looks like in vertical. Probably helps that there's not a lot of kicking, so it's a bit different in the women's game. But
I think my exciting aspect of it is to see the amount of engagement, to be honest, because you are going to be touching a new fan, a different way of engaging people into our game. So I think that's, like, from my point of view, I think that's most exciting to sort of see out the back of it. I know they'll see a great game.
Yeah.
Blues, yeah, going real well.
that trophy's going to fit perfectly in vertical, isn't it?
It's going to be so much fun when I get to interview all the Chiefs players afterwards and they've won. It's going to be awesome.
Don't smile. Whatever you do, don't smile. Bruno loves a TikTok dance. You're going to be on TikTok watching that at some point, Bruno.
Yeah, definitely not TikTok dance, but I'll be definitely watching that on TikTok.
Are you on TikTok?
No, my lovely partner is, so I'll be having to grab her phone, get on the old TikTok. So thankfully I can do it here, but yeah, man, I'm too old. Just when you know, I don't even have TikTok, so it just shows how far behind I am when it comes to the young people in New Zealand at the moment.
Young people.
Just the basic coverage for us, mate.
Yep. The old sport, television. Mate. Can't go wrong with Sky Sport.
Can't go wrong with Sky Sport.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, let's go to our tipping competition to finish off the show. Only 4 games this weekend. Of course, go to tipping.super.rugby, go into our league and see how we're going. It hasn't been the best week for all of us. Owen Carroll remains out front.
3 out of 4.
Yeah, the top guys are all 4 out of 4. They were breaking
they
away.
They picked the Rebels.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so
I'm average this year.
Let's go straight to our tipping. Moana Pacifica versus the Reds.
Reds.
Bryn?
Yep. Reds.
Okay. Waratahs at home against the Crusaders, Bryn. What do you think of that?
We have the Waratahs are going. I'd probably say the Crusaders, but we've seemed to lose them the last couple of times. So, no, I think that the Crusaders will come back. I think they'll have a good review, and hopefully there's a few guys that'll be coming back and getting some good minutes, and hopefully they can start the Australian tour with a win. So, yeah, we're picking the Crusaders against the Waratahs.
Yeah, I'll go Crusaders.
Crusaders. This is the big game. The Hurricanes against the Chiefs. Hurricanes at home.
I have to go the Hurricanes just based on form. And I don't know. It's just hard to go against them at the moment. I can't wax lyrically about them for an hour and then not pick them.
Yeah, the Hurricanes rugby pod is going to be picking the Hurricanes this week. Bryn, are you on board with that?
No, I'm going to go the Chiefs.
Yes. Yeah, that would
put the
cat amongst the pigeons, because the Chiefs would then jump up onto 27 or 28 points, and this looks a little bit different, doesn't it? Especially with the Blues and the Brumbies having the bye.
So what happened to all that chat, though, about the good leaders and, you know, like, you know, they've got all these players and...
we did say that the Chiefs, when they've got their backs behind the wall, against the wall...
I feel a Friday night tip change.
Friday night tip change. We're coming next week, Hurricanes in, and Bryn's got them all right.
Bryn, your Rebels on the up at home against the Highlanders.
No, I've got Highlanders.
Highlanders.
Get the Highlanders to win.
I keep picking against the Rebels, but they keep killing me.
Yeah, so Rebels at home for you.
No, absolutely not. I'm going to go Highlanders, but I'm not going to be surprised if they ruin my weekend again. They are physically dominant. That's my only concern there. They win a lot of those dominant physical stats. So
yeah,
that pack will need to be up for it.
Well, the Rebels need those points now, with the back half of the season looking a little bit tougher.
Highlanders,
so they'll be fired up. The Highlanders need. They're just scraping in at the bottom of the eight, aren't they? On 11 points, so they could be lucky in that the teams below them. But the Crusaders might come through and tip them up and get that bottom spot. And who knows what's going to happen with the Drua, who are in seventh. But either way, thank you very much for joining us once again on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Please send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Get into the comments section. We'd love to engage with you throughout the weeks. Thank you very much for viewing us again. James Parsons, thank you to you.
Thank you.
Bryn Hall in Japan, off to training. Go have a good one. And thank you finally for joining us once again this week. We'll catch you next week. Don't forget, you can catch Aotearoa Rugby Pod on Sky Sport, on YouTube, on Rugby Pass TV. You can catch us all over the place. Appreciate your time. Mā te wā.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.